Blog Talk Radio. and welcome to Into the Darkness. I am Pam Ray. With me, as always, is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen, and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Tonight is our Dark Poetry Night. If you find that this show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everyone's taste. For this particular show, we have a mixed bag because we had 2 different Into the Darkness shows that had carryovers, and so we will be delving into carryovers from our Dark Humor Contest and carryovers from our Irish Serial Killers Contest. And I, for one, am definitely looking forward to delving into tonight's poetry. And hello, Rex. How's it going?
All right. What's up?
Oh, not much. Just like I said, looking forward to the show. Relaxing, looking forward to hanging out with you, maybe another cool poet or two, who knows. I was glad that it finally stopped snowing today. So, you know, that was a bonus. Stopped snowing. So there was a bonus there. And life is good. Life is good. And what's up with you?
Not a thing.
Same old, same old. Well, I get that. You know, I got to say, I really like Tool. And that song, Schism, is one of my favorites by them. I always forget, though, that the beginning is so quiet. And then I always think about playing the whole 7 minutes and 26 seconds of it, but usually cut it off at around between 4 and 5 minutes. It's just an awesome song. All right. So what do you say? You want to get this ball rolling?
Yep. Well, you've got A Very Blue Boy by Victoria Frost. That was yours.
Okie dokie. A Very Blue Boy by Victoria Frost. And it goes like this. Little Boy Blue was sitting quite still. Okay, let me start over. Little Boy Blue was sitting quite still, watching the town from up on his hill. Ignoring the flock of soft-braying sheep, he dared rub his eyes to bite back the sleep, for he had been dozing in warm summer sun, dreaming of playing with others so fun. But instead, he's stuck here, deep in the corn, instructed to herd cattle with his little horn. To listen to chomping and mewings and crunch, his tummy growled hungry as he missed his lunch. And so did the zombie who ambled on by that the poor little blue boy neglected to spy, who wandered through corn stalks and up to the hay where little poor blue boy spent sleeping that day. He grabs his small arm and took just a bite, which naturally gave little poor blue boy a fright. He squeals and he kicks and pulls hard as he can be, till the sad, hungry zombie let his arm free, or so he had thought as he went for his horn, which tumbled away from him into the corn. He blew and he blew, but no sound came out, so he screamed and he hollered and started to shout. He was the one charged to sound the alarm, but horror he realized that he had no arm, just a big puddle growing so vibrant and red. He'd no way to warn the town of the living dead. If only poor blue boy had not gone to sleep, the dead would have been caught instead silently creep, closer and closer to town they trod on, little poor blue boy, now part of the throng. And so if you wish a small lesson to learn, don't sleep on duty lest your village burn. End poem. And she took prompt number 3, which was puh, he said, his mouth tasting sour, his stick curled up, he ran for the shower. I have to say, I really enjoyed this one. It was really amusing. And Rex, your thoughts?
Too. The little boy blue motif had me thinking of Andrew Dice Clay. Little boy blue, he needed the money. And another. And also the little boy who cried wolf. Except in this turn of phrase, all he did was sleep all day, so he couldn't actually cry wolf. And when he actually went to cry wolf, so to speak, or zombie, yeah, hey, you know what? He had his arm chewed off. Now he's part of the throng, unliving, raiding his own village to eat what comes handy and natural.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree. I like how you mentioned the Andrew Dice Clay comment there, and how it also like kind of has an idea of the boy who cried wolf, only as obviously, but what I like about this is she twisted a Vic nursery rhyme. She took a classic child tale and she put that dark humor into it. I think throwing in the zombie was a great idea. And what I particularly liked is the fact is that she gave some sympathy to the zombie, which adds to the humor and adds to the storyline. He squeals and he kicked and he pulled hard as he can be till the sad, hungry zombie let his arm free. And you're just like, aw, poor, sad, hungry zombie. I thought this was a great take, and the prompt and the whole idea of the zombie taking a bite out of little boy Blue's arm. And I like how she puts the lesson at the end, like all so many classic fairy tales have. And so if you wish a small lesson to learn, if you absolutely have to take a lesson from this, because it's that, don't sleep on duty because zombies may come wandering by. I have to say, though, I also found humor in the title itself, A Very Blue Boy. Like, honestly, at first when I saw that title, I thought this was going to be a poem about somebody who got a bad case of blue balls. So I really like a clever twist, and this was I very much enjoyed. I know it's been done before, but I think a dark nursery rhyme show would be a fun idea. That's what this makes me think of. I like how she keeps calling him poor, little poor blue boy. Just absolutely fun and clever and very well done. I think one of the best parts about this poem, Rex, is that she took inspiration from your line, but completely went into her own path, her own realm. And I think that shows a lot of individuality. So very well done. And what do you got for us next?
Stinky Flea by Lawrence, 67. The Adventures of Nigel the Fat Cat and his homie Alfie in Stinky Flea. Damn, who cut the cheese? Was that you, Alfie? P.U., not me, Nigel. I think it came from Princess's direction. Shut up, dumbass. I'm a lady, and that smell is definitely not ladylike. I think it was Ralph. He licks his ass. He's such a dog that way. Ralph, Ralph, leader of a vicious Hispanic dog gang known as the Chihuahuas. Ralph, Ralph, Ralph. Damn, if it wasn't you, Ralph, Ralph, then who? It's filthy and wretched of rotten eggs that smell. Get me out of here. This is worse than any hell. Run. Chalk one up for the flea. And poem.
Good read there, Rex. And what a fun write by Lauren 67. He really did a great job of capturing the dark humor. Your reading voice, the laughter and the voice you chose to use, which I think was awesome. It reminded me, do you remember that cartoon, Oliver and Company? And there was that one,
nope,
like Chihuahua that was voiced by Cheech Marin.
No.
I'm guessing not. No, okay. Well, anyways, it reminded me of that Chihuahua. I liked it. You did an excellent read of this. Love the laughter you put in. I really like that the stanzas were separated by that hee-hee-hee laughter. Lawrence did a great job with the dark humor, some good old farting humor. Raff Raff, leader of a vicious Hispanic dog gang known as the Chihuahuas. Damn it, if it wasn't you, Ralph Ralph, then who? And I like that he brings in the stench, the hee hee ha 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 ha, chalk one up for the fleas. Another ending that had a clever twist to it, and the whole idea that it wasn't the dog, it was the dog, it was the fleas. And he wrote to prompt 9, which was, it's filthy and wretched, a rotten egg to smell, get me out of here, this is worse than any hell. And he says, happy birthday to a cat's best friend, and many more, Rex. Well, that was nice. And he, wonderful use of sound in here. Like, I like that he put here, puff, puff, for the sound of a silent fart. That was very cool. Very cool. Very much enjoyed this. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Oh, it's usually Nigel and Alfie who get the goat's end of things. And they did in this case, but they actually didn't actually deliver the goat's end of things. It got delivered unto them. Yeah, yeah. Dogs always get the blame, except this time, hey, the fleas had it on. A nice touch twist.
That was. And you're right, the dogs usually get the blame because, you know, they're usually the guilty ones with those silent farts. And, that was a nice touch there. I like how he spelled out P-U-P-E-E-Y-O-U. I thought that was pretty fun. So, great comment there, Rex. All right. And what are we going to next?
The Reaper Don't Care by Babla.
All right. The Reaper Don't Care by Babbler. And it goes like this. He guffaws as he paws, tugging at her drawers in the blackened back of the department store. A burnt-out mall rat who was all that till Fat Cat decided the webs were that. He still hears squeaking and crawling, bathroom door scrawling, refusing to admit the empire has fallen. He's got her top off and he's about to pop off before the alarm tips the cops off. And she's just as smooth as she was back then, still a 10 out of 10, same as her friend. Firm derriere, not a lick of body hair. Small smile behind a 1,000-mile stare. For a moment, he feels like a man again, waving his javelin, fresh mound to slam it in. When he felt the air shift and out of mist, puffing a spliff, grinning with no upper lip. The Reaper watched him wiggle his hips, not giving a shit about privacy or some bullshit legacy. What mother does or doesn't buy a burnt out in a fantasy. Black lady don't care who finds him there, his bottom half bare, ass in the air, getting his rocks off in the back of a rundown Claire's. The jig is up, time to hand it in. Called to dust, stopped mid-thrust, atop a department store mannequin. End poem. Oh, that was great. I enjoyed that one. What did you think, Rex?
Well, The Man from Mannequin. I think she ought to turn this into a series and have some fun with it. And she doesn't, she runs it in a nice, what is it, little bit of rap angle with some flair in it. You've got a pause, guffaws, draws, right down to, what's it, mall rats, fat cats, where it's at, squeaking, crawling, scrawling, pop off, cops off. Well, runs through the whole thing, but I like the angle with the, the Reaper? The Reaper don't care. Well, of course not. But cooked up by a burnout in a fantasy, kind of hits on a mannequin tweaker, or that'd be a good name for this guy, a mannequin tweaker. Ghost story.
I like that.
Watch out. He's coming to a neighborhood near you.
I really liked this title, like, all the way through. I like how your suggestion for that she should make this into a series. Maybe instead of focusing on the character in this, right, an idea would be to focus on, you know, the idea of death coming across all these people in just horribly embarrassing and dark situations just before they die. Although it can also work to focus on this character, like focus on his life. I think this is definitely one of those rights that has potential to, you know, to hear more about these characters or this style of situation. I like how she uses the nickname, the phrase "Black Lady" for the Reaper, for death, because, you know, that's one thing I find to me makes an intelligent poem and an interesting poem is when you don't use the same words over and over again, the same phrases. Like, I was glad to see that she chose to put in "Black Lady" rather than just saying the Reaper again. I remember back in my days shopping at Claire's, and another one with a great twist at the end. A lot of times, some of the best humor is planned out so that it's that surprise at the end. As always, Babbler is just excellent with inner rhyme and end rhyme. I really like, he still hears squeaking and crawling, bathroom door scrawling, refusing to admit the empire has fallen. He's got her top off and he's about to pop off before the alarm tips the cop off. What else here? Small smile behind a 1,000-mile stare. For a moment he feels like a man again, waving his javelin. I like that she uses the word javelin because that actually reminds me a lot of your Loon series, how you use different language to describe the male parts. And so I feel like with that use of the word javelin, she really picked up on that. The imagery this poem puts in your head and the whole idea of this man being discovered, pants down around his ankles, on top of a mannequin, just this is dark humor at its best, really twisted and very well done.
I
So what do we got next, Rex?
Orange Socks by Potters. Dark as he ran, on his feet orange socks, majestically bouncing his well-endowed cocks. Yes, two of them swinging along as he ran, proudly displaying he was twice a man. Some called him a freak, and others a star. He couldn't believe he would come twice as far as those friends around him whose dicks numbered one. They fell by the wayside. All were now gone. You guessed it. He worked in the adult film world. He thrust and fucked on both cops he whirled, showed off his manhood and his very large balls, made his name in the industry's salubrious hall. The women orgasmed, fans thought he was great. Sex wasn't his problem, not in his doubled state. It's love that he craved, but this was his failure. He leapt off the cliff as he cursed his defalia. And boom.
Great read there, Rex. This is like those Doublemint gum commercials. Double the pleasure, double the fun. I like this wonderful rhyme and flow. It's good to see a write by Potters. Yes, two of them swinging along as he ran, proudly displaying he was twice as a man. And he couldn't believe he would come twice as far as those friends around him whose dicks numbered one. That was a wonderful twist with language, a play with words, come twice as far. I really liked that. And again, this is another one with great inner and end rhyme. He thrust it and fussed in both cocks he whirled. It's like a circus act. I could imagine seeing this in an adult.
Yes, spinning neckties on the clowns.
Exactly, right? I also like the use of the word dipsalia, and you know, at the end. And kind of a sad, dark twist at the end. I admit that, but it was just absolutely an amusing write. Entertaining, that is for sure. And he took the quote about orange socks. Or just, I don't know if he took the exact quote or if he just went along that theme, but I definitely liked it. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, he hit him on the right end. Yeah, hits kind of bites at that notion of being one of Barnum and Bailey's sideshow freaks. Some call him a freak, and others a star. And he couldn't believe he would come twice as far. And I like the double bend in that thought. He couldn't believe he would come twice as far. And where was it? The women orgasm, fans thought he was great. Sex wasn't his problem, not in his double state. Well, not when you can come in the front door and the back door at the same time. Well, I don't want to make him happy.
But, right?
Even with a double-breasted thought of pleasuring on the erotic side, happiness was not a good thing. Well, was not available. So the thought of having... Damn, the angle to play out such a life, and then to just, oh well, it's not going my way, so to speak. I think I'll jump off the cliff.
Yeah, that was a bit of a, well, like I said, just a sudden, like, wow, really dark ending. But I wonder, do you think there's actually, have ever been in the history of the world, anybody born with such a genetic mutation?
One out of every 5 to 6 million little boys.
Really? Are you making that up? I need Jeremy. Oh, okay. I need somebody to fact check you. Really?
Fact check it all you want. It's true.
Wow.
Hey, it's the same thing as walking in as a hermaphrodite. Why not?
Oh, that's true. Well, I knew hermaphrodites exist. But I suppose, because I kind of figured there might be, just because of the fact that sometimes what happens is originally somebody, they were going to have twins, but the one twin gets absorbed into the other twin. And then so sometimes they're born with, like, just, like, an extra part, you know. So, so that makes sense. I actually believe you. I just felt like screaming for a fact check. And, what was it? It's interesting how, and it makes me think, like, when you brought up the mention of how it has that ring of the Barnum and Bailey type freak shows, it's like, it makes you think of when you read stories about, like, Siamese twins who get married and, you know, and what things must be like. So, yeah, it's interesting. And very, very intriguing, right? Great rhyme and flow, great humor. And, you know, and a lesson learned at the end. Sometimes it's not about the socks, it's not about the cocks, it's about the love. So I guess if you can get anything deep from that poem, it would be that. So very cool. All right. What do we got next, Rex?
Little Miss Red Riding Hood's Wool.
All right. Little Miss Red Riding Hood's Wool by Betty Page. And it goes like this. Dressed in cherry red, only cape's hood on her head, beauty running swift. Naked blur of flesh, lost among green forest trees, bows of lightning. Flashing subtle breasts, perky soft voluptuous, bouncing her fine ass. Plump, sweet, champagne peach, popping off, bubbling high. Lustful wolf, just shy, just sigh. Stares with evil eyes, intent on dining tonight, craving her lush flesh. Inhaled innocence, swirling angelic in cloud, pursue relentless. Little Miss rides on, searching to find her warm home, charmed, smitten, now prey. End poem. So, I like this one. Rex, what did you think of Little Miss Red Riding Hood and her
bouncing my ass? She ain't brave. She's hunting. I mean, she's bare ass for one thing, except for a damn red cape. So, she's just out having a frolic in the forest in the evening time. Yes, cool wind blowing across crushed velvet skin as the wolf says, I guess he is going to dine tonight.
Right? Yeah, you just know that Little Red Riding Hood isn't as innocent as she pretends to be. I like this sensual dark twist on another fairy tale. She took prompt 13. When in the company of hounds, wear some clothes. Wonderful imagery throughout, wonderful sensuality. I like lost among green forest trees, a rose of lightning. I thought that was a really cool metaphor and imagery. I felt like that was kind of like a duality of layers within those lines. Stares with evil eyes, intent on dying night, craving her lush flesh. Little Miss rides on, searching to find her warm home, charmed, smitten, now pray. I just, I definitely feel like the wolves are in more trouble than actual Little Red Riding Hood herself. Just a absolutely clever writing, great take on the prompt. So, very well done. Oh, and what do we have next, Rex? Oh, hey, there's Jeremy.
You're getting your lead, huh? Your Lord by Peter Solway. The loon is on the loose, soiling the gardens, urinating and shitting both. Wouldn't take thou sweet lass, mushroom picking, stench of loon revolting. Your perchance for after intercourse strolling, pointing out green things, now brown nuggets to explain. Stench of London drain, your post-coital excursions, afternoon, best around the hall of oils. Discuss DNA samples, loon your uncle on Madonna's nipples, the frog with big green testicles. Irish as April Fools, muffle on a rusted Datsun, hounds of halitosis. Loon is on the skirt and loose, Pink Floyd on the grass. Your Lord, a need to be distressed. Tourists with gas masks, little income, my Lord of cricket. Shit on slippery dip, not a good look. Dead dog around neck, noose of defeat. Song of the infants, Blake instructed. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. And this is another awesome write by Peter Solway. Wouldn't take thou, sweet lass, mushroom picking, stench of loon revolting. I like the imagery of mushroom picking. Man, that's just a sight for sore eyes or sore something. Stench of London drain, your post-coital excursions afternoon best around the hall of oils. Stench of London drain kind of takes me back to the idea of how major cities like London, like in it makes me think of a Charles Dickens book, you know, with the idea of that time period when London and other major cities were polluted because of the fog released by factories. Irish as April Fools, mufflers on a rusted Datsun, hound of a halitosal. Wonderful imagery there to describe the idea of the putrid smell. And, you know, it's funny that he mentions the Irish as April Fools, and this show is both dark humor and after the dark humor, Irish serial killers. So that worked well for that place. My Lord of Cricket, shit on slippery dick, not a good look, dead dog, round neck. Those lines there actually kind of remind me of Babbler's poem and the idea of, you know, getting caught with your dick where it shouldn't be. Definitely some wonderful dark lines. And I like Pink Floyd on the grass was another great line. I like how this takes a look at with the humor of the almost, I don't want to say over openness to sexuality. I don't know if that's the right phrase, but this idea that, you know what, they're just some things we don't need to see. We don't need to see big green testicles or shit on dipsticks. It's definitely intriguing and amusing. And I liked the combination, and I thought it added to the humor effect of the mixture between modern language and kind of a more older style language, like perchance. I thought that was very clever. And Rex, your thoughts?
This is cleverly disguised. The idea, the loon, is actually the baby. And this is the couple who's got nothing but shit and piss flowing everywhere. Can't take them out because, hey, there's always a stench that comes with it. That's why the tourists have gas masks. The dead dog around neck kind of hints at that notion of yeah, you're kind of stuck with this now. It's what you're delving into. And the last two lines, Song of the Infant, Blake instructed. There's a note right there. Hey, this is what you get when you do it. Now you have to deal with all that shit and this.
I like that you noticed that. That you noticed that, yeah, the idea of, and you're right, that makes a lot of sense. You know, all of a sudden I'm thinking of the phrase, throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Yeah, mushroom picking, stench of loon revolt. That does kind of remind me of the whole idea of the, what is it that they do to boys when they're born, where they snip off the extra foreskin? You know what I'm talking about. Pretty much every man has it done. Well, shoot, I should know this. I had both my sons.
Well, it's called a bris in Jewish.
Yeah, that's a specific
form.
Right, but that's circumcision. Yeah, the brisk,
yeah.
Circumcision is the actual trimming off of the foreskin. The brisk is the ceremony that Jewish people have. Yeah. Yeah, it kind of made me feel like it, when you were talking about that, and I suddenly, like, you were making your comment, I went, oh, yeah, picking at the mushrooms does kind of have that idea of the circumcision. Tourist with gas mask. And you know what? And there's another line where it makes sense. And you're right, it was cleverly disguised. And I like that you saw that, you know, because that is what it's like to be a parent and try to change a diaper. So very cool observations there, Rex. All right. And what do you got for us next?
I Never Suffer Fools Lightly by Neutron.
All right. Is it my turn to read? Yes.
Yep.
Right? Okay. I should be able to keep track with there being only two of us. All right. I Never Suffer Fools Lightly by Neutron Bomb. According like noose around the neck, jumping and buffoonery is less pronounced this millennia, as is the psychiatric discourse. Insidious as is the TikTok lobotomy is in full tilt. The attention deficits crave their moment in the flood, scraped knees and blood, ripping up the buffalo turf. They are covered in mud, sprawling down a slip and slide, no discernible talent, rather unbridled destruction. Who is running this loony bin? Why do I frequently find myself at its behest? Surely there are more worthy constituents. This loon is on the loose until she represents a risk to herself or others. End poem. I liked that one, especially to the nod of the TikTok, to the TikTok lobotomy is in full tilt. And she took prompt number two, which was the loon is on the loose. And what do you think, Rex?
Political and social commentary, which does hit on quite a bit, especially that TikTok thought and the attention deficits crave their moment in the flood. Oof. Covered in mud, sprawling down a slip and slide, no discernible town, rather unbridled destruction. Or as I say a lot about who and what is definitely running the board, so to speak. And then the question, who is running the loony bin and why do I frequently find myself at NCS? Yeah, because you pay attention, you go there for a laugh, and then you get involved.
Yep, exactly. And I'm glad, great comment there, Rex, and you're right. There's the social commentary within this. And then I like that you brought up the question, why do I frequently find myself at its behest? Because that often does happen. It's something we know is just a complete lobotomy for our mind of no value. We find ourselves just drawn to it. Now, me personally, I'm not into TikTok. I haven't gotten into it, but I know plenty of people who are. You know, and I do like this all the way through, but especially in that beginning where she says, pronounce this millennia. Jumping and buffoonery is less pronounced as millennia as this, as is the psychiatric discourse, insidious as it is, the TikTok lobotomy is in full tilt. I like that she put like the phrase moment in the flood, like that idea of that moment of fame, that moment in the flooded lights, the spotlight, but also in the moment of being the downfall of mankind's ability to think for themselves. This actually reminds me about an article I read. I read this article that said that it blamed Sesame Street as part of the reason that children started developing shorter attention spans. Is because, you know, and I don't know if I necessarily agreed with the article, but I still found it interesting. And the idea that because, you know, Sesame Street presented shorter segments, like shorter bursts of learning, rather than how children were traditionally being taught to sit through a full subject, to sit through a full lesson, that the idea was that because of the style that Sesame Street taught in, it contributed to children's inability to sit. Now, personally, I think children probably have always had an inability to sit still for long, and Sesame Street probably just picked up on that. But, you know, this poem did make me think of that, and really I can't totally dismiss the idea, because while Sesame Street doesn't seem like something to me that, you know, I grew up watching it as a kid, and, you know, never seemed something to me that seemed too short, but compared to other shows, you know, like, you know, I can't think of ideas, but, you know, other children's shows that came before it. But, you know, like, to me, like, Cock is almost absolutely ridiculous. I watch my daughter watch TikTok videos, and I'm like, what are you getting out of this? It's like 5 seconds, and I don't know. It's just definitely funny. Yeah, I found this one particularly amusing and intelligent, and like you said, Rex, great social commentary. So very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
A loony poem with dark chocolate humor for Rex's birthday by Kristen Tu. Rex, this poem is for you. I see from your AP page that you are indeed not of the canine persuasion as I first suspected, though your poem certainly suggests that you do quite a bit of scratching behind your ears, panting, digging, and sniffing around. I also see you go on about liberation from constriction. So maybe you are kept behind the fence. And you seem more than a little inclined to growling, biting, and soulful howling at the moon. Why must you keep us up all night with that blasted noise? I am not sure what they are putting in your water bowl, but if it's cobalt ink, stay away from that. We'll take away your papyrus, Matt. Bad dog. Bad. I see you like garlic, and for that reason, we will have garlic chocolate cake. Thus, you won't be the only one killer breath. So Rex, this poem is for you, although I don't know you, so I hope you won't be offended by anything I wrote, and you won't climb up on my stage where I strut and fret and bite me in the leg. See? I'm still not convinced. Or slap me silly. I am sure Will would, slap that is, and I would have the rocks to apologize, unlike the other guy who only has one rock to his name. Besides, you wouldn't want to see a grown man cry.
Great read there, Rex. I really like that Tristan too jumped in here and wrote for the contest, wrote for the show, did a wonderful tribute to you. And it's funny because he doesn't really know you, but he did his research. And I always say, if you're not writing about something or someone you know, do your research. And I really enjoyed that he went over to your page, gave it a read, looked at your poetry, so many great lines all the way through. I see from your AP page that you are indeed not of the canine persuasion, as I first suspected, though your poem certainly suggests that you do quite a bit of scratching behind your ears. I also see that you go about liberation from constriction, so maybe you are kept behind a fence. You know, I like how he has so much nod towards words that you use, like within your introduction on your page, like papyrus and garlic, and the mention of the garlic chocolate cake, which sounds horribly just horrible and delightful at the same time. And
oh no, I think if you do it with roasted garlic, it should be pretty good because it's sweet,
right? It might actually be. Garlic, now, roasted garlic with vanilla ice cream is actually good. I've had that. That works out well. So it might actually work. But I like how he's this existentialism of, is Rex a dog or isn't he? And the ending line is spot on. Besides, you wouldn't want to see a grown loon cry. This was just great fun to listen to you read and to read it. It just cracked me up. I think you did a wonderful tribute to you. And Jeremy, did you see Jeremy's comment? He wrote, he said, make no mistake about it, Rex is most assuredly a dirty dog. Oh, that's awesome. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, he took the angle of the loon and left me as the dog who did the biting from the original piece, which was good. And he even threw in that bit from the Oscars with with Chris Rock and Will slapping the shit out of him. So that was a nice touch to finish out the back end of it.
Right, that was. And this poem was written long before that happened. So it's like one of those prophet-type poems. So very cool there. Great comment, Rex.
Well, they couldn't. Well, he must have added that in for a little bit of a kick.
Oh, you did? Well, okay.
Well, it was 16 days ago. When did that? Yeah.
Okay, you're right. He must have added that in. Yeah. No, he had to have added it in because that happened after this show. So, okay. Yeah, because he couldn't have been that good of a prophet. You know, I'd be really impressed if he was, but I'm going to guess that he's no Nostradamus. All right. Great. Those were just wonderful dark humor poems. I really enjoyed the way people were inspired. And very cool.
What's today's day? Today's the... Ooh, yeah, he did this right after that. Because that was on the 27th of March.
It would have been
for the 12th. So actually, yeah, he wrote it a couple of days after the incident. So
really?
Yep.
That doesn't make sense to me.
Today's the 14th? No. Today's the 15th right now.
Huh.
So he wrote this. He wrote this pretty much on the 31st or April Fool's morning.
Yeah, but no, the incident with he added in the part about Chris Rock and Will Smith.
I'm saying this. He wrote this after the Oscars. But the Oscars were 19 days ago. This is only 16 days old.
Okay. Feel like I'm losing my mind, but because I swear that event happened after we had this contest. But okay. I guess not. Huh. Interesting. All right. Cool. And all right. What do we got next?
It's not my fault. I'm Martha Geffel. And you got an SC.
Ah, yes. Good old Martha supplying us with a recording. Let me go ahead and find that. Here we go.
It's Not My Fault by Martha Geffel. It's not my fault you fell in love with me. I never meant for you to fall completely. Everybody told you from the start that all I would do is break your heart. Now you act like you didn't know all along that I was the type to do you wrong. You know you were just waiting in line to let me mess with your mind. Now you sit around and cry the blues like you didn't know what I would do. You act the innocent, but I know you knew exactly how this thing would go. You knew just what I would do, but thought it'd be different with you. If you had really given it some thought, you'd know a leopard doesn't change its spots. Now you sit around and cry the blues like you didn't know what I would do. You act the innocent, but I know you knew exactly how this thing would go. I'd say I'm sorry, I only played with you, but we both know it wouldn't be true. You knew exactly what I am, and for you, I'd never really give a damn.
Great singing right there, Martha. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And just a reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poem in your voice. Now, Martha didn't actually write to a specific prompt. In fact, I think this was actually written, it was one she'd put on the board, and I thought it worked well for the particular theme of dark humor. I like that she took a modern-day approach to the Aesop's fable of the frog and the scorpion, with the, you know, end being, well, you knew I was a scorpion. You know, because, and to me, it's that whole idea of you knew I was a snake and snakes don't change. You knew I was a scorpion and scorpions don't change. You know, and now you sit around and cry the blues like you don't know like you didn't know what I would do. You act the innocent, but I know you knew exactly how this thing would go. And it very much reminds me of a narcissistic personality in that twist of, you know what, you knew what you were getting yourself into. You recognized me as for what I am, and you knew that eventually things were going to go bad, and you chose to go forward anyways. I also like, you know, it's wonderful twisted lines, and I say I'm sorry I only played with you, but we both know it wouldn't be true. I like how there's this just, she captures that personality, that personality of somebody who is so unapologetically themselves and so willing to point the blame at the victim. You know, this one is intriguing to me because while I definitely see the humor, I would say the humor is more like a kind of an irony to me than a straight ha-ha humor. But I definitely see the whole observation on somebody who has that, you know, narcissistic personality. So just an excellent song and very well done. And Rex, what are your thoughts on Martha's Right?
Well, this is Granny Got Her Horns, and she's definitely Granny. You knew what I was. I told you. You experienced it. Ah.
That is a really good option. And you're right. It is the whole, yeah, it does have that whole idea of Granny that got her horns. And you can definitely, in this right, you can see the horns sticking out. That's for sure. And I like that she threw in there the line about, you know, a leopard doesn't change its spots. I thought that was pretty cool.
That's Granny.
Yep. Granny never, she doesn't change her spots and she doesn't change her underwear. Absolutely. All right. What do you got for us next, Rex?
My Doppelganger and Me by Truth Jewel.
All right. I'm beginning to think we read this one. I think we did. Do you remember if we read this one?
Nope.
I guess it wasn't.
Oh, yeah, we did.
We did. Okay. I don't know why I had it on the carryover board. Sorry about that. You want to go ahead and grab the next one? Because I just remember the discussion about the doppelganger.
Black Widows of Liverpool.
All right. The Black Widows of Liverpool by Nan529. And it goes like this. It's in the newspapers, the paperboy shouts out. Read all about it, Borgois of the slums, those who could read in the pubs crowded round, old neighbors nodding their heads. Didn't I tell yer? Slum courtyards, family gathered. They were the talk of Liverpool. Let's go back to the crowded slum. Two sisters whisper. Plan is formed. They go to the burial society. Each week they pay in. No one suspects they're doing what's right. Few months pass. Catherine walks to the pharmacy to buy fly paper. It's not the flies that's dead. Just young John, only 22. Off to the society they trot. Rubbing their hands, they collect what's due. Now follows 8-year-old little Mary, then Margaret, age 19, whispers behind their back, the neighbors suspect. Moved house not once but twice. Last of all, Thomas, age 45. It was Patrick, his brother, who called the police. One of the sisters decided to flee. It was a small bottle of arsenic water they found. They thought they were clever when they dipped the flypaper in water. Now, truth be told, they were charged for one murder, though they said they murdered another six. Police dig up the other bodies they had arsenic to. Now they dangle at the end of a noose in Kirkdale Jail. Catherine and Margaret, those evil sisters of two, no more insurance money for you. End poem. And she wrote about Catherine Flanagan and Margaret Higgins, also known as the Black Widows of Liverpool. And Rex, your thoughts?
Yes, that spoon full of arsenic makes the medicine go down. Right, nasty old ladies. Right, ugly old ladies there too. What? No wonder they went to kill him. Besides, easy money. You pay for the what amounted to life insurance. Then you collect that and ask you bump them off. Nicely done, ladies. And you got away with it. Because why not? Hey, who suspects you for that? Yeah. But then again, you had to move because it's getting a little out of hand. They was a notice of bodies disappearing. People dying in your house. Youngsters. 22, 8, 19. Oof. Now 45. Now that could have been one they might have gotten away with. But the other one, well, the 9-year-old probably would have been easy too, because most kids back in those days, you didn't really make it past into teenage years. It was right ugly time to be alive.
Absolutely.
But, nothing like boiling flypaper in water. That way you don't have to buy the arsenic. Everybody has flypaper up.
Yeah, that was actually, and I know that was brought up in other poems, that was actually a smart thinking in the idea, because if you bought arsenic, you know, that would have immediately brought suspicion. But buying the fly paper and you know, soaking it in the tea really
well,
was...
Well, arsenic was readily available because of the rat problem.
Yeah.
People remembered.
Yep. Yeah. It's interesting because what's interesting to me, and great comment there, I like that you brought up the idea of the easy money. And it, what I liked is that you brought up how it would have been easy to get away with it with a child because of in that time period in the mid 1800s. It would have, or early 1800s, it would have been quite easy to get away with killing a child because of the mortality rates of young children. And in fact, and I know we discussed this on the last show, is they weren't suspected of anything until the last guy who was killed, and that was the one that they were convicted for, was because his brother went to the police after he had already been buried and said, hey, you know, isn't this suspicious? My brother was just completely healthy, a robust guy, and he just dies of this, you know, upset stomach. And so that's why they dug up the body and did the autopsy. And tested for the arsenic, he just. I also like that. Well, I really like this poem by Nan. She does really great at these history style, story style poems. It's great to see her write again. You can tell that she really gets into these, And, you know, he, wonderful attention to detail. And I like that she titled it, their nickname, the Black Widows of Liverpool. They were actually, I counted them as Irish serial killers because while they lived in Liverpool, you know, while they, as landladies, they were actually originally, like, they came there from Ireland. Another thing that I liked about this is that she does mention the other murders, and the thing about the other murders is they wouldn't have even been charged on that, but the one sister, and I can't remember which one it was, but one of them tried to strike a deal, tried to get out of the death sentence by striking a deal and turning in other names. So there was this theory that there was actually more than just these two sisters involved. Like it was a ring of women with a money making scheme. So
gang of women, Pink Elephants or something. They were called. I can't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember either, but the one sister had turned, like, tried to give a bunch of other names in order to, yeah, and I can't remember if there was a specific name, but all I know is that she was, of the group, but it would kind of make sense, but then again, it would also, you know, I mean, there's really when it comes to the mind of...
There it is.
What is it?
It was the Elephant and Castle Mob. Or the 40 Elephant.
Okay. Huh. And what was that?
The 40 Elephant, they were called.
Oh, the 40. Oh, okay, that was the name of the group?
Yep.
Okay. Huh. Well, that's...
Oh, no, that was New York City.
Oh. Okay, but a similar idea.
Yeah.
Like a similar idea and these alleged conspirators. Let's see. It says Margaret Evans, Bridget Begley, and Margaret Higgins were named as poisoners. Margaret Potter, a Mrs. Fallon, and a Bridget Stanton were the insurers, and Catherine Ryan was alleged to have obtained the arsenic needed by one of the poisoners, according to Flanagan. Evans had been the investigator of the crime ring, beginning with the murder of a mentally handicapped teenager in which Ryan obtained the poison and Evans administered it. Although Evans did not personally receive an insurance payout from the death, there were implications that she had dealings with the boy's father and may have profited from those. So that's interesting, the idea that one woman possibly profited in other ways, like a marriage or such that would have been beneficial to her. So, interesting. All right. Well, great right there, Nan. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
The Wicked Widowmaker by Rooster Cogburn. Once a hard-working, honorable man was I, house not large, ornate like lord and gentry, but clean, tidy, fine, feisty wife to cook, clean, a son, another child to come, supplementary. Until, that is, 1 year till the day, wayward folly, I succumb to the winds of sinister evil, big smoke's allure, temptation, flush after market, to their rooming house, so began of evil. Lied with laced whiskey, 'tis on the house, good sir. Prosperous gentlemen like you, welcome here. And like a fool who's easily parted from his money, down my throat I slaked their charitable cheer. What good to a woman, child, or beast, drunken slob, possessed by Beelzebub, encamped inside, my mind in torment, only refuge, return, subdue fire, spinster, Catherine, Margaret, I, starry eyed. Their benevolence, much like their beauty, flagging, yet my need for liquor, intoxicating, irrepressible, like a bear in search of honey, dare not deny excess or excess, which is cast spell, kept, putrescible. Demands evermore outlandish, no money, no booze, with the curse upon me, home, sold for a grommet, bewildered, betrayed, wife and child, our son, uprooted, remorseless, my soul quest only for the devil's vomit. Such a volatile concoction, cocktail of vice, pernicious, more spinster, sister, still glass, the more I crave. Bereft of resources, craft, desperate, their master plan, no nice Dr. Jackal, always scandal hide, depraved. Willful murdered their objective, two deviant dissenters, at their puppet and chain, set loose, obey orders, prepped on malt whiskey with additive mystery powder. The Dutch courage, I murdered the county recorder. Like Jack high on crack, disemboweled, dismembered his body, emptied contents of fat wallet, my gift to sisters grim. Payment, the usual, for a service well done. Sister's nemesis, old judge had passed sanction, closed the house of sin. An eye for an eye, punishment fits crime, thus in my frenzy, blood trail followed, the alehouse where I wallowed. Last will and testament, please, Mr. Executioner, take note. Blame the devil and bury my body in ground unhallowed. And boom.
Great read there, Rex. Excellent write by Rooster. I had to give this one a HM. This one, I really like. What impressed me most about this one is that he took it from the point of view of the victim. And here he presents us with, to me, a victim who maybe isn't really that innocent. Like, you know, they as he says, once hardworking, honorable man was I, house not large, ornate, like lauded gentry. I like the use of the word lauded. I thought that was very cool. The idea that this gentleman who has a good life, and then, you know, has his son, has, you know, a child on the way, fine, feisty wife to cook and clean, and throws it all away for his temptation, the temptation of another woman, the temptation of the whiskey. You know, I like the first person narrative. So, like with all the other rites, we get to know something about the sisters who are known as the widow makers. About Catherine Flanagan and Margaret Hagen, but we get to see it from a different point of view. We get to see the idea of the somebody drawn into the entrapment. I like the reference to Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and I noticed that he says in his note, Jack refers to infamous Jack the Ripper. So, you know, a couple different clever references in here. What else? Where's another? Such a volatile concoction, cocktail of vice, pernicious, more spinster sisters fill glass, the more I craved. So there's that idea that the sisters are evil. They have this diabolical plan in mind. But if he had not given in to his own vices, his own whims, perhaps he would not have found himself in that situation. I felt like the end line particularly touched really well on almost like a religious Catholic-like guilt. I shouldn't say just Catholic, but that's what comes to my mind. And the idea of wanting to be buried in that unhallowed ground, wanting that eternity of a punishment. So just an intriguing dark write and very well done. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. And your thoughts?
Oh, he did dig into the whole thought with these two, especially with bringing in someone they could control to help with some of what they wanted, to getting rid of the county recorder. That'd be the one who actually puts down the, it's either the death or the one who cared the business of keeping records of the payments for the death bounty they collected. And still, he was prepped on malt whiskey with additive mystery powder. I kind of hit on the notion. He was also one of their ones that didn't actually die in the moment. And then that thought, can please mix the execution, take no blame the devil and bury my body in ground unhallowed. So he paid for his crime in another way. He didn't die by their hand, so it kind of missed out. I bet he told all.
I like it. I like it. Yeah, and you're right. Yeah, that was one of the ones that didn't didn't die. And I like that you mentioned the consequences gone through. And what else? I'm looking here. Sorry. We might need to end up grabbing poems just to give you a heads up, Rex. I'm not sure. We'll see how things go. Yeah, and you're right. You really did delve into these particular serial killers really well, and delved into that particular victim who managed to survive. In the so empty content of fat wallet, my gift to sisters Grimm, and great lines there, but great observations, Rex. And all right, what do we got next?
Crimes of Vanity, Not Sanity by Diane D.
All right. Crimes of Vanity, Not Sanity by Diane D. And it goes like this. All growing girls dream of being celebrated for something special. Most beautiful, valedictorian, Miss America, the best Olympian. Jane inspired.
Wait a minute, didn't that sound good?
Oh, you know what? For this one, she actually didn't make a SoundCloud.
Oh, okay.
So I'm guessing I should read it?
Yeah.
Okie dokie. All right. Where were they? I'll just start over. All growing girls dream of being celebrated for something special. Most beautiful, valedictorian, Miss America, the best Olympian. Jane aspired to be the woman to have put to death more of us than any living human before her. She implied power in her trophies. A mad tailor who sewed her own eyelids closed. She called father a committed lunatic who fed her, nurtured her maturing mind. Insanity, garnering vanity became the Kelly bloodline claim to fame. And so Jolly Jane grew in mind and body, and casualties grew in number. Soothing herself, she sucked souls into her bottomless, unsated pit. She held her helpless favorites, but treated all equal like her next victim, dosing them just enough medication so that they would slip in and out of helplessness, evoked consciousness, so she could crawl in bed with them. Jane became Jolly Jane among patients, amassing a special interest in poisons. Jane would fondle her victims as they died and then try to see the removal of their souls through the rolling of their eyes. Proud of her accomplishments, Jane wanted it known she knew what she was doing, for guilt by insanity would rob her of vanity. End poem. And I have to say, I thought this one was just a powerful write. Just to, I gave this one silver. I thought she did a great job at delving into the psychological aspects of a Jane and how her life twisted her mind. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
I remember this nasty bit of work. She was doomed from the outset. A mad tailor for a father who sewed his own eyelids closed. That was that's got to be something that sticks with you. And he taught her all manner of things before he actually did that. So this kind of angel of death, prolonging the death, dosing and bringing him close and letting him come back so she could do it over and over again, and then bed him as well. He was definitely semi on the thought to necrophilic, or definitely necrophilic in some aspects, because yeah, she got a kick out of this one.
Yep, and I like that you brought that up, because that was part of her psychological makeup, is the necrophilia, or like, I guess it would be kind of a form of necrophilia, the obsession with her victim's genitalia, even before they were dead, but even after they were dead. And she definitely just an extremely disturbed woman. With this one, I like that Diane opens up with the idea that, you know, all growing girls dream of being celebrated for something special. And then Jane brings in a Jane Toppin, otherwise known as Jolly Jane, actually bragged about wanting to kill more people than any other serial killer. Like, she wanted to break that record. And I like too that she brought in her father, Jane's father, and how he also suffered from insanity. And it's interesting, like, to me, what I also find interesting is that she brings up at the end how Jane bragged about her accomplishments. And if known she knew what she was doing for, guilt by insanity would rob her of her vanity. Like, here's someone who did not want to be seen as insane. They would have rather have been seen as a serial killer who knew exactly what they were doing. This is Jane Toppin is definitely, to me, first of all, I think she was written to the most out of all the serial killers we presented in the Irish serial killers. And people really just were fascinated with her, which I can understand. I know, like you had brought up, Rex, that with her being an angel of mercy. And it's interesting because I think we had discussed this before, and the idea that she wasn't quite an angel of mercy in the traditional way, because oftentimes an angel of mercy being a doctor or medical profession who thinks they're doing what is right. And for her, there was just didn't really seem to be this idea of doing what is right, but rather what amused her. I said this before, but it kind of reminds me of the experiments in Nazi Jewish Nazi concentration camps with the whole idea of bringing the patients to the edge of death and then bringing them back, like playing with them. And so just absolutely a powerful rite and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Mortal Love by F. Sharp. Welcome to the Maiden Tower brothel, where love and death slither from bed to bed. Under the sheet lie poisoned minds. Behind curtains, a shank one finds. With chiseled stare, steel blade, serve sentences levied by chambermaid. Every wish for love seems amiss when pillow muffles an expected kiss. No empty braided noose of twisted love one finds. No call for pain will be declined. When hearts aflame in this bed you've made, fiery passion will not dissuade. Dorcas Kelly, the madam from Fishamble Street, in Dublin, Ireland, love of death sweeps you off your feet. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. I like the title of this poem, Mortal Love. And he covered, what was her name? I have to go look now. I have
her name's right
say,
there. Dorcas Kelly. They called her Darkie Kelly.
Okay. Sorry about that. Yeah, he covered Darkie Kelly, which I was glad of because I think only a couple people wrote about her. I will say that of all, there was two that I wished somebody had written about. Kieran Patrick Kelly and the Shankill Butchers were the two that did not get written about that I wish somebody had, because I found those ones particularly fascinating. But I like the short, impactful lines of this. I like that he wrote about Dorcas Kelly, who, interestingly enough, based on her story, you can't help but wonder if maybe she was framed and she was innocent. And I based it on the idea that she was claimed to have had a lover who was well off that she went to for money. And just the time period where it was very easy to be burned at the stake for whatever reason. I really like under the sheet lie poisoned mind behind curtains, a shank one finds. Wonderful use of the word shank for a type of a knife. I like that he used poison minds and the idea that it's not just a physical act, but an act of the mind. And he really delves into a little bit of the history with the reminder of that Dorcas Kelly, the madam from Fishamble Street in Dublin, Ireland. They actually have a pub named after her that I believe is on the same street. It might actually be the same building that where she worked. No empty braided noose of twisted love one finds, no call for pain will be declined. There's that idea of that wish for love, that wish for what couldn't possibly happen for a woman of her calling and her time. And she was actually, I believe she was the first trialed and executed serial killer in Ireland. And Ireland does not actually have a lot of serial killers. Yes, and she was burned. Let's see here. After her execution, she was walked by prostitutes on Copper Alley. 13 of them were arrested for disorder and sent to Newgate Prison, Dublin. Also, it's always interesting to me how there's always that mix of reality and legend. And it says here, various legends grew up around Kelly after her execution. The most common story is that she became pregnant with the child of Dublin's Sheriff Simon Luttrell, 1st Earl of Carhampton, a member of the Hellfire Club, and probable client of Kelly's maiden tower. She demanded financial support from him. He responded by accusing her of witchcraft and having killed their baby in a satanic ritual. The body was never found. Darcy was then burned at the stake. So you wonder how much of that is complete legend and how much of it might have a realm of truth in it. The description, there's a description given of the an execution of the murderer, Mrs. Herring of Tyburn, London, that was said to be very similar to the style of execution that Dorcas Kelly went through. And it should be noted that she was an alleged serial killer, given the that it probably wasn't the fairest trial. She may have killed, but then again, we just don't know for sure. So I find this one a particularly intriguing story, and I thought Scott did a wonderful job of capturing the grim reality of that particular situation, and not only the grim reality of the murder itself, but the grim reality of her life. Love of death sweeps you off your feet was a great ending line and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
Well, they don't actually give a true account of her execution, except this was 1760, 61, but they do give an account of Mrs. Herring, of what her execution was like. So the assumption being that it would have been the same as Dorcas Kelly's, because and it was dual. You got hung first, and then you got burned at the stake. You got placed on a stool about 2 feet high, a chain under your arms, a rope around your neck, and made fast to spikes of being driven through a post against which she stood. And they pulled out the stool, let her strangle there, hung for 15 minutes, and then they'd package her up with parcels of faggots for the burning. But the crowd was so great, it took quite a while to do that. And then you actually had the burning afterwards. So, hey, take care of it all in one. She won't even go into ground anywhere, hallowed or unhallowed. She's just going to be dust in the wind. And the account of her being a serial killer was added later on as an embellishment, because there was no accounting for the five supposed bodies that they found in her her abode years later or later on. That was just something that was tossed in. So, and accusing someone of being a witch back then was an easy way of getting rid of somebody you didn't want with, because that person that the blackmail was the sheriff. And the baby was never found, so she either had the baby or didn't have the baby. It was just fake. So he took care of it another way. Burn the witch.
Exactly. That was really great observations there, Rex. And you're right, a lot of it was added on later. Like, she really technically wasn't a serial killer, because there was only one murder, and it was even just a suspected murder. Anything like, and a lot of it had to do with the fact that if you didn't want your own sin pointed out, like if any there were any of her clients that didn't want it pointed out that they were, you know, visiting her establishment, yeah, the accusation of witchcraft would have been just, that was, as you said, it was the way to do it.
It wouldn't have mattered, knowing or unknowing, because everybody knew the place was called Copper Alley. That was quite the place, just like Whitechapel 100 years later. It was where you went. It was the red light district. Everybody knew everything that went on down there, even the coppers.
Absolutely. You're right. Like you said, everybody knew the Whitechapel district, this district here. You know, if you went there, people learned about it. I have to say, I found these Irish serial killers particularly intriguing. I think for me, the most difficult one to read about, well, they're all difficult to read about, but the Shankill Butchers were especially difficult to read about in how horrible the torture and the anger. They were actually, what would they call that, an ultra-loyalist group who mainly aimed at killing Irish Catholics. But also had disputes among each other and killed each other, or individual disputes, but also killed, I think, like 12 Protestants that were mistaken for Catholics. Just an extremely, and this happened in the 1970s, 1980s, just a extremely horrific time. All right. Now, I have a just-in-case one before that. Do we have any others?
Nope, that's it.
That's it. Okay, well, I will read my just-in-case one, and which is, of course, off-topic because I did not dig up, and I don't know if it's particularly dark, but anyways, now, Rex, if you want to grab something while I'm reading this.
No, I'll close on this one.
What's that?
You can close on this one.
Okay. I just want to make sure. This was actually written for a Jim Morrison contest, and where you could choose any Jim Morrison poem or prompt or song or prompt to be inspired by. And I chose to be inspired by the poem The New Creatures by Jim Morrison. And this is The Smells of the Earth, and it goes like this. The sacral road, the lunar cave, is hidden away from our greed, away from our folly. The earth smells like leather and ear piercings. This is a mall walker's paradise reflecting our nothingness. Before the world was created, we licked the toad and called him master. Follow me to where rules don't matter. Lose yourself in grains of sand. Drink from potholes. Buy from the clearance racks of jaded whores. They strut with feline grace and perform magic tricks with erection. Abracadabra, now you see it, now you don't. The heart is beating a drum of a madman's life. There is no redemption in this cage of ribs. We are marching across the belt of Orion. Our origins are slaves to our wants. Come hither, I say. Come to where the scales fall from the serpent. We cry with the summons, forever, forever, forever. We are the grief of harmony, falling fast asleep, and we will learn nothing until we find dreams of tobacco on a purgatory road. End poem. And obviously, Rex, you're the only one here to comment. So make it a good one.
Oh, I see you dipped into a number of songs. Let's see. You got L.A. Woman. got The End, got the Lizard King, got Roadhouse Blues. Was it Weird Scenes? Riders on the Storm. Well, they fit because of the thought. The L.A. Woman, I like that thought, but the Earth Smells Like Leather and Ear Piercings, A Mall Walker's Paradise, Reflecting Nothingness. And then the thought was Feline Grace, called them Four, wasn't it? I saw that somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Licking the Toad, hitting on the Serpent. What was it? Oh, he hit the Serpent anyway. The idea being, and Break On Through, that's in here too.
Yep, it's like a big bowl of Jim Morrison salad. Thank you for the comment, Rex. I appreciate it. And I like that Selena ran this Lizard King contest. Very inspiring. All right. So, great show tonight, Rex. Thank you for being here. As always, I appreciate you. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the shows, who is listening now or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. Thank you to Jeremy for his brief streaking across the LNP board. Thank you to Fill My Eyes for everything she does in the background. And before we completely end the show, since we have extra time, let's go ahead and talk about some upcoming shows. All right, Rex, I know we got something going on for Sunday, and that's your show, your concert. What do we got?
Celebrating the upcoming 420. Get out your bongs,
awesome.
Get out your wraps, get out the pipe, and get out the hookah.
Very cool. Very cool. That's going to be a fun show. I'm looking forward to that. Should be a lot of good laughs and, and up in smoke. So make sure everyone to check out Rex's contest for Sunday's Rhythm and Rhyme. Get smoking because we're all aboard the 420. And join us later tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, for Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company. Then join Babbler and Victoria on Saturday, 12:30 a.m., part sinner, part saint, because Afaviana's out of town visiting. I don't know what their topic is, but it's sure to be a good show. As I always say, make sure to check out all the contests put out by our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses. You're sure to find something to inspire. And, of course, in Late Night Poets, check out the topic boards. Always, always something that will inspire you. Saturday's show will be, Exploring Ephrasis with Captain B2 and Daniel DeShino. And they are featuring the artwork of Vladimir Kush, the metaphorical realism of Vladimir Kush. For After Midnight, I am running the contest for that. Avalanche is the theme. It has a variety of quotes with that focus on the idea of avalanche. And you can, of course, take that literally or you can take it metaphorically. I personally am a big fan of metaphorically. The Art of Seduction, the topic on Wednesday, the topic is first. And Twisted Tuesdays, the topic is poetry in motion. And Fill My Eyes, I don't know if the contest is still open, But she had this contest running with these wonderful pictures of hummingbirds and those angel-style fish, the beta-style fish, like the photographs looking like they're, like, in motion, and great responses to those prompts. I'm definitely looking forward to all of the shows next week. You know, the after midnight ones and the earlier ones. And you know, I have to say I've you know, this is, did you know that this is a National Poetry Month, Rex?
Yep, every April.
Yep. I've managed so far to write a poem a day. So granted, some days I skipped and just wrote two or three poems when I got around to it. And but yeah, just an awesome lineup of contests and prompts and poetry. And you know, it's National Poetry Month to me, I mean any month to me, is a great time to be involved with poetry shows. Any month. But, you know, I'm just going to take this time to say that if we have any of our usual writers, you know, usual listeners who have thought about calling in but haven't quite gotten around to it yet, I will say that, you know what, I think it's a wonderful experience. We love hearing from new callers. I think, to me, people get a lot out of the experience of calling and sharing in the reading and commenting. And the other thing is what I find is, and what I like to tell people, is we only bite if you request to be bitten. Other than that, we keep our fangs to ourselves. Isn't that right, Rex?
Yep.
Yep, exactly. All right. Well, great show tonight, Rex, and have a good night, everyone.
Good night. You make enough noise?